This is Invest Talk from KPP Financial, helping investors make sense of the markets one day at a time. Here's your host, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to the Monday, June 22nd, 2026 edition of Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Greer, and I'll be with you over the next 45 minutes to an hour as we dissect what went down in the market today, talk about the stories that matter, and answer your finance and investment questions. Now, before we get rolling, I do want to remind you all that our next new wealth webinar is set for Tuesday, June 30th from 12 to 1 Pacific time. It is 1 week from tomorrow. It is called Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs, and it is free. But as always, you must register at investtalk.com. All right. Before we talk about today's market performance and run down those show topics, let's tackle this caller question now.
I wanted to ask a question about the aerospace and defense sector. I was looking at a ETF, PPA, it's the Invesco Aerospace and Defense ETF. I just wanted to get some more exposure into these sectors and wanted to know if this was a good way to get some broad exposure into these industries and see if this would be a good fit. Thank you so much. Bye.
PPA is the Invesco Aerospace and Defense ETF. It is a passive ETF that tracks the SPADE Defense Index and invests in U.S. companies systematically important to defense, military, homeland security, and government space operations. So you're going to see aerospace names, defense electronics, IT services for government, and cybersecurity alongside your traditional defense primes. Now, the companies that are at the top of this fund are ones that you have probably heard of. GE Aerospace, Boeing Company, RTX Corporation, Lockheed Martin, rounding out the top four, which makes up about 30% of this portfolio. In fact, the top 10 make up about 55.41% of the overall portfolio. Now, year to date, this thing is up about 11.96% from a price perspective. Over the 1 year, up 30.46 versus its category of about 45.64. That is a meaningful underperformance versus the peers, primarily driven by less exposure to European defense names because this is a US only ETF and the recovery drag from Boeing. Now, I understand why you want to own an aerospace and defense ETF. I mean, you're looking at the Iran war, you're looking at NATO's 2% GDP commitments, you're looking at the CHIPS Act and their domestic manufacturing, and the fact that the president has promised, on top of the largest defense budget ever this year, to have the largest defense budget ever next year. But at the same time, for this fund specifically, you're paying 58 basis points for passive exposure that, again, is meaningfully underperforming peers. And I will say that I think one of the largest areas of where we've seen progress in the defense space is internationally. Why? Because of European rearmament. Now, we recently spoke on a previous show about why that may be drying up a bit, i.e. countries saying, ooh, now we're in a position where, yes, the Iran war is waging, but we got to choose between fighting domestic issues, i.e. inflation, cost of living, and bolstering our military. Germany's stepping back. So overall, the theme, I think, as a long-term macro driver is good. In the short term, though, you've seen a lot of run-up names and shifting government positions towards what they want to give a priority for. Either way, I think if you want aerospace and defense exposure, you want to have international exposure as well, and certainly do it for less than 58 basis points. Thanks for the call. Now, what a great show for you last Thursday, because of course Friday was a best of show with the Juneteenth holiday. But on Thursday, we looked at the Fox Roku deal and what big media M&A told us about the streaming economy. We also answered a question on the stock OKE One Oak Inc. that was submitted through our YouTube channel. Now, if you didn't catch this episode, I encourage you to go check it out. And remember, the best way to never miss an episode of Invest Talk is to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. On to today, where my main focus point is going to be taking a look And if the market today is 2022 all over again, and what we need to be looking for in terms of a risk checklist for 2026, because the market does look a lot like 2022 in three uncomfortable ways. And investors are nervous about inflation. Interest rates are still driving market behavior, and expensive growth stocks, well, they are vulnerable to sharp resets. But 2026 is not a copy and paste. And investors who understand the similarities, but most importantly, the differences, are going to be less likely to panic, less likely to chase, and less likely to rebalance at the wrong time. We'll also touch on why all this capital absolutely flowing into AI may actually be a warning sign. Also, a lot of unicorn companies over the past decade in Silicon Valley. We'll touch on the zombie unicorns. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about how some companies are trying to make compute a financial asset. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Bitcoin and another on Allison Transmission Inc., ticker ALSN, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. Well, folks, we have a lot to do today, but we are headed into our first break. It is always a quick one. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. And if you're listening in the Bay Area on AM 1220, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. When we come back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
Serious investors are certain to have finance and investment questions.
I'm looking at an ETF. It's Goldman Sachs, NASDAQ.
And the best person to ask your question in the right way is you.
If that would be a good hold to have in a Roth IRA for the long-term horizon.
And 24/7, rain or shine, Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero stand ready to provide their unbiased answers.
This isn't really a copper play. This is a iron ore play with some aluminum copper.
If you're looking at ETFs that hold so few names that are so top heavy, I think it is probably ill-advised to pay an expense ratio like this in order to get exposure that you could really get yourself.
Your participation makes InvestTalk better.
Hey guys, Brian from North Carolina here. I'm a big fan of the show. I haven't missed an episode in over 5 years.
So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. It's happening soon, online and free of charge. An all-new InvestTalk Wealth Webinar. Beyond the Yield, how to invest for your income needs. Tuesday, June 30th, noon to 1 Pacific Time. But you must pre-register at InvestTalk.com. And now the InvestTalk phone lines are open. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are waiting for your finance and investment questions. 888-99-CHART.
I would say that the best way to describe stocks today is probably mixed. You had big tech weakness weighing on the headline indices, while breadth underneath, I would say, told a bit more of a constructive story. The Dow gained 0.3%. The Russell 2000 hit a fresh record close, up 0.8. But the S&P fell 40 basis points. The NASDAQ dropped 1.3%. Stocks did end a bit off their worst levels, but still, for the most part, negative on the day. Now, the big tech underperformance, that was obviously the main story because of how much weighting that has in the indices. Alphabet was notably lower following another high-profile AI leadership departure. SpaceX has now sold off more than 30% from last Wednesday's peak. Netflix declined, and several other Mag 7 names were weaker. However, the impact on broader sentiment, a bit softened by this continued strength in semis and continued strength in memory, where the AI demand narrative remains, for the most part, firmly intact ahead of Micron's earnings and headlines around supply chain constraints and higher memory pricing. But nevertheless, the rotation into cyclicals and into financials continued. Money center banks, investment banks, energy, airlines, parcels, logistics, off-price retail all outperformed on the day, while software, China tech, home improvement, home builders, and defense underperformed. Oil continued to sell off on progress out of the U.S.-Iran talks in Switzerland and a pickup in Strait of Hormuz transits, with WTI crude settling down 2.6%. But the falling oil isn't bringing down treasury yields the way it once might have. Yields rose 5 to 6 basis points across the curve as the market's focus has shifted squarely to the Fed. And rate hike expectations, they are building meaningfully, with the market now pricing about 40 basis points of tightening through year end. Both B of A and Deutsche Bank are now calling for hikes this year. B of A looking for 75 basis points and Deutsche looking for 50. There's also growing discussion about how the Fed's shift away from forward guidance under Warsh could boost bond market volatility and in turn strengthen the long end. Elsewhere, the president said he no longer considers Anthropic a national security threat. Microsoft CEO criticized the dominance of frontier LLMs and highlighted a strategy for cheaper, more user-friendly AI models. Intel hired a former CEO to lead its foundry business, and AbbVie confirmed it will acquire Apogee Therapeutics for nearly $11 billion. SpaceX began the sale of at least $20 billion in bonds. The dollar edged higher. Gold and silver both slipped about 1%. And looking ahead for the rest of the week, Tuesday will bring June flash PMIs and Richmond Fed manufacturing, along with a $69 billion two-year auction. And Thursday's PCE report is the week's main macro event. All right, let's take a look at this next question. This time, we're going to take a look at a question that came in from the Invest Talk YouTube channel in the comment section, because as you're over there watching our videos, remember, we do have YouTube exclusive content. I encourage you to leave a question in the comment section rather than picking up the phone or doing something else. We make it as easy as possible for you to submit your questions. Now, this one says, I own a small amount of ETH, and I'm down about 41%, probably more after transaction fees. I've held onto it for 5 years. Is it worth hanging on to, or should I cash it out and reallocate? From what I understand, ETH has some utility, contrary to Bitcoin. Now, you know, this is rough in any asset to be down 41%, especially after a long holding period. What we've seen is a collapse in the ETH-BTC ratio. It's at like 0.025, and it's a level not seen since early 2023 and far below the peak of about 0.09 in 2021. I mean, ETH is on track for its first ever 3 consecutive red quarters. So the underperformance, it's not just bad luck. ETH has structurally underperformed Bitcoin over the period. Now, you are correct. It does have more utility than Bitcoin. It powers most of decentralized finance in the stablecoin economy. It's the primary settlement layer for tokenized real-world assets, and smart contracts, NFTs, decentralized apps, they all run on Ethereum. But here's the problem with the utility argument right now. Record usage is actually coinciding with falling fees. Base layer fees dropped nearly 50% in Q1. Ethereum is deliberately sacrificing short-term fee revenue to scale via layer two solutions, and that's strategically smart long-term, but means the token isn't capturing value from all the activity. Now, you know, the case for holding is that given where the price is, you're seeing a lot of flows, right? And that's essentially all crypto is. And crypto does historically move in violent cycles, but at the same time, I mean, a 41% loss is brutal. You have seen wild opportunity costs from other markets. And the utility argument hasn't really translated into price performance. Now, if it's a taxable count, that's a juicy loss. I think selling that creates a capital loss that can offset capital gains elsewhere. And losses carry forward indefinitely, right? They do not expire. You know, if you have gains off elsewhere to offset, this is a great way to use it. If it's a small position and you can stomach more volatility, I mean, I have no problem with having small allocations to crypto. I think anything beyond Ethereum and Bitcoin is even more gambly than Ethereum and Bitcoin themselves. You know, if you want to stay in crypto and you're frustrated with ETH, I think swapping it, the bigger benefit is you're going to get that tax loss harvesting. But no one knows where this is going. You know, the forecasts range from $1,500 to $8,000. This is the longest duration asset there is. What we do know is that the opportunity cost of holding a declining asset over 5 years is real, and every dollar sitting in ETH at 41% loss is a dollar not compounding in something that's a bit more productive, where the utility actually bears itself out in real cash flows. Thanks for watching, and thanks for leaving your question in the comment section. All right, we're going to break. Still to come, my main focus point on whether or not this is 2022 all over again And as always, more answers to your finance and investment questions. So you have one burning in your mind? Pick up that phone and dial 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
This is InvestTalk, now closing in on 63 million downloads. And Luke Guerrero is here taking your questions live. 888-99-CHART.
This is Shred from California. I'd love to find out your analysis on ALSN, Allison Transmission Holdings. They seem like a solid company. They had some defense in there, trucking companies that truck products. I would think they're all over the world. And I just feel like they're just a good trucking company. I just wanted to see what your whole analysis would be, if that's a good stock to own for long term. Thank you.
Allison Transmission Holdings is a name that we are definitely familiar with here because it is a name that we used to hold for clients. Now, I believe we sold out of it a bit earlier in the year, sometime in April or May. But what it does is it is a fully automatic transmission for commercial and defensive vehicles company. They have two segments after this acquisition. They're Allison Transmission, core on highway defense, trucks, buses, military vehicles, and they're Allison Off-Highway. So they're mining, construction, ag equipment, and they're actually the world's largest manufacturer of medium and heavy-duty automatic transmissions. Now, it is a transformed company after the beginning of this year. They nearly doubled their revenue from their acquisition of Dana Off-Highway. All year-over-year comparisons because of this are a bit distorted by M&A. So you want to focus on your adjusted metrics, on your organic trends, and also note that today there's actually term loan refinancing, which should reduce their interest costs from this acquisition. Now, again, revenue was up 884% year-over-year, beating by 1.9%. Adjusted earnings per share was only up about 6%, though that did beat. And adjusted EBITDA was up 22% year-over-year, and they had margins sitting at 26%. That's pretty stellar, right? And that's coming out of an acquisition. Their defense segment saw 64% year-over-year growth. That is the strongest growth amongst any segment. But at the same time, core Allison Transmissions saw about 4% year-over-year contraction. So this acquisition, this Off-Highway, contributed to nearly half of total revenue. Now, with any acquisition, you have now to bet on execution. In the recent guidance, they said there's about $120 million in annual run rate synergies, but that's not expected to really be realized until the next couple years. Now, year to date, it's up about 23.72%, up 33.39% over the past 52 weeks. And this reduction in interest costs that was announced, certainly to the benefit of a company that for some time had been a bit technically weak. I mean, you did see it fall nearly 3% after earnings, despite massive adjusted beats because of some of the issues going on, right? Because of that core organic business contraction, because net margins fell within that core business on those integration costs from about 25% to 8%. Because the North American highway market, the foundation of the original business, remains very uncertain. But I mean, there are positives, right? At the same time, you have defense revenue growth, 64% year over year. You have $120 million in those synergies that they hope to realize. You have a six-year dividend growth streak. This is tough because, again, I like this company. I like this company. We held it for a very long time, but it's fundamentally different. It is executing a large industrial acquisition at a time when the core business is soft. And so, you know, this is a one that I probably would keep on my watch list for now because July 23rd is when they reported is the first clean post-integration read. And so you need to decide whether these synergies are going to arrive fast enough and if that justifies paying about the highest multiple they've had in the past 5 years. Again, I want to see it's a little bit of proof in the pudding before I would dive back into this one, which is, as you mentioned, a great company. That is Allison Transmission, ticker ALSN. Thanks for the call. Let's make it two in a row from 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is John from Georgia. I was just calling to see what you guys thought about Advance Auto Parts. Ticker is AAP. And I was just wondering, is this a good time to buy? I'll listen for the answer on the show.
Advance Auto Parts is up about 41.02% year-to-date, up about 12.14% over the past 52 weeks after having a real rough 2023 and really a boring 2024. So this is really a deep turnaround story. I mean, they still don't have a single buy target amongst their analysts. It's an automotive aftermarket parts retailer. It hasn't seen much growth. I mean, again, turnaround story. Growth is only about year over year 1% in terms of revenue. Earnings per share, though, came in at 77 cents, crushing by about 79%. And they had the strongest comp quarter in about 5 years. You know, I 6-7 months ago would have said, stay away from this thing. You'd be crazy. But I mean, it's a very surprising automotive turnaround this year. That earnings per share beat is real. They have their 5-year best comps. They have about 4.1% margin expansion. But I still think it's in the midst of a turnaround. You know, this is a big show-me quarter that should answer whether this Q1 was genuine inflection or a one-quarter setup. And then until you see kind of follow-through from this most recent quarterly report, I would keep this one on my watch list. Thanks for the call. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story, AI spending paradox, hyperscalers left behind as the trade evolves. That's tomorrow, but for now, we still got plenty to talk about. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we're ready to take your calls anytime at 888-99-CHART. Stop guessing with supplements. Most of us take vitamins blindly, wasting time and money. Your body is unique, and it deserves better. Introducing True Diagnostic, an easy at-home health test. With a quick finger prick, True Diagnostic uses advanced epigenetic testing to analyze over 1 million data points and measure up to 180 biomarkers. You will receive clear digital results with a personalized 90-day actionable plan to improve health, boost energy, and slow down your aging process. There is absolutely no guesswork and no generic advice. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off at TrueDiagnostic.com using code INVEST20 at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic.com and use code INVEST20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription. True Diagnostic, spelled TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Use code INVEST20 for 20% off today.
There are a few things that make KPP Financial special. One of them is parallel investing. This means they invest right alongside their clients. Here's how it works. When KPP Financial makes a trade for their clients, Justin Klein makes the same trade for himself and KPP. On the same day, at the same price, and same percentage. No front running, no special treatment. Learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com.
Kevin Warsh just chaired his first FOMC meeting this week. The Fed held rates at 350 to 375. The median committee projection called for 1 to 2 rate hikes in 2026. And the first time the dot plot has pointed towards tightening since the hiking cycle began in 2022. After the announcement, the S&P hit 7420 near all-time highs. The 10-year yield hit 448. But with all this, CPI, it's running at 4.2. And the equity risk premium, the extra return investors earn for owning stocks over bonds, 2 basis points. That's among the lowest readings on record. Stocks are offering essentially zero compensation over risk-free treasuries for the first time since the dot-com bubble. That combination looks uncomfortably familiar. 2022, the S&P 500 fell 28% over 9 months as inflation surged. The Fed hiked aggressively, and expensive growth stocks got repriced. The question, therefore, listeners are asking, whether explicitly or in the back of your minds, is whether 2026 is setting up for a repeat. The answer is yes and no. And understanding the distinction is what separates investors who navigate the environment from those who will inevitably get hurt. The similarities are real, and up front, we have to acknowledge them. First, inflation is once again the dominant macro variable. In early 2022, CPI was accelerating past 7%. Today, it's at 4.2, lower, but certainly moving in the wrong direction after being at 2.4% in February. The Fed went from promising transitory inflation to emergency hikes. Today, the Fed has gone from projecting rate cuts to projecting hikes. The pattern, central bank behind the curve, forced to tighten faster than markets expected, certainly rhymes. Second, interest rates are driving market behavior more than fundamentals. In 2022, the 10-year yield surging from 1.5 to 4.2, that was the single biggest driver of stock returns. Every upward tick crushed growth stock valuations through the discount rate mechanism. Today, the 10-year has risen from 396 pre-war to 448, the 30-year hitting a 19-year high, 518. The market's obsession with every Fed statement, every inflation print, and every rate hike probability shift, it's identical to 2022. Third, expensive growth stocks are vulnerable to sharp resets. In 22, the NASDAQ fell 33%, Meta lost 65%, NVIDIA dropped 50%. The Mag 7 hadn't been named yet, but their predecessors were decimated. Today, the PHLX Semiconductor Index has pulled back from its highs with a 3.6% drop on a single day last week. More than $1 trillion has been wiped from the Mag 7 since SpaceX filed for its IPO. Growth stocks are priced for perfection at a time when the rate environment is actively hostile to high multiple companies. But the difference is, those are just as important. And this is where investors who panic in a 2022 playbook could make a mistake. The biggest difference is that today's companies are genuinely profitable. In 22, many growth stocks were pre-revenue or barely profitable. The correction repriced businesses that didn't have earnings to fall back on. In 26, S&P 500 companies are beating profit estimates by 18.2%. Tech earnings are growing 43% annually. Microsoft, Nvidia, Alphabet, Meta, they generate massive free cash flow. The AI CapEx isn't being funded by burning venture capital. It's funded from operations. That earnings floor did not exist 4 years ago, and it provided a valuation support that limits downside even if multiples start to compress. The second difference, the macro backdrop. 4 years ago, the Fed was hiking from zero to nine into a 9% inflation environment. Today, the Fed's at 350 to 375 with inflation at 4.2. The gap between the policy rate and inflation, far narrower, which means the Fed doesn't need to hike as aggressively to restore real positive rates. One or two quarter point hikes, which is what the dot plot projects, is a very different regime than the 525 basis points of tightening delivered 4 years ago. The third difference is what's causing inflation. In 2022, inflation was driven by demand side forces, by pandemic stimulus flooding the economy with cash, supply chain issues. The Fed could address that by cooling demand through higher rates. In 26, inflation is driven by a supply shock. The Hormuz closure removed 15-20% of global oil. Supply shocks are harder for the Fed to solve because hiking rates does not open the strait. If the MOU signed this week holds and oil normalizes, much of the inflation pressure evaporates without the Fed doing anything. That asymmetry where the inflation problem could resolve itself through geopolitics rather than any Fed action, that's a key distinction from 2022. The fourth difference is market breadth. In 22, the correction was broad-based. Everything sold off. This year, the rotation has been much more selective. Energy, materials, industrials, consumer staples, they've all outperformed. The equal weight S&P, that's beaten the cap-weighted version by the widest margin since the 1990s. The average stock, doing fine. It's the mega-cap tech correction, which represents roughly 35% of the S&P. That's vulnerability there. If you're diversified across sectors and not just fully weighted there, the risk is manageable. The practical rate checklist, or rather risk checklist, for the second half of this year comes down to three variables. Oil, if the MOU holds and Hormuz normalizes, inflation decelerates, the hike risk fades, bullish. If it collapses, we're back in crisis mode. Then you got earnings. Q2 reports starting in July will be the first to fully capture the war's impact on consumer spending and corporate margins. That is the real stress test. And rates. If the 10-year stays below 4.5, stocks can grind higher. If it pushes above 5, that equity risk premium goes negative and repricing accelerates. The key here is this is not 2022, but it's not 2023 or 2024 either. The market is in a transition zone between the AI bull case and the rate hike bear case. The investors who understand which parts of their portfolio are exposed to each scenario and size their positions accordingly will come through this period intact. The ones who treat every pullback as the beginning of a crash or every rally as proof that nothing can go wrong certainly will not. Let's keep things moving and drop in another listener question from 888-99-CHART.
Good day, Justin, Luke. Long, long time listener to your show here from the Midwest. Thank you guys for everything you educate us on. I appreciate it. My question today is on a ticker symbol NEM, Newmont Mining. I believe that company does mine gold, copper, and silver, if I'm not mistaken. And I know I've heard from the show here that silver is really booming right now. However, Newmont has just been, after a good year last year, it's just been trading in a range here from the mid-upper 90s to like 125 or so, and it won't break above its ceiling there. I'm not sure if this really has a future ahead of it, or if I should just dump it completely and head to gold and like GLD, which seems to be going up all the time. I'm just questioning, what are your thoughts and feeling about this move? Is Newmont worth holding on to, or should I dump it and go to something else like GLD? Thanks. I'll listen for your answers on the show. Have a good day.
This is a classic question. Should you hold physical gold or should you hold the gold miner? And although they do both give you exposure to that shiny yellow metal, they are definitely carrying different risk profiles. Now, we've covered GLD plenty of times. It's a 40 basis point gold ETF. It is the Spider Gold Shares ETF. They track spot gold prices directly. So they got gold bars sitting in London vault. They have no earnings. They got no management. They got no operational risk. This is pure commodity exposure. Now, NEM, Newmont Corporation, is one of the world's largest gold miners. They have operations in the U.S., in Canada, Mexico, Australia, Ghana, Peru, a pretty diversified business. And as mentioned, they produce copper, they produce silver, they produce zinc, they produce lead. It is also, I believe, the only gold miner in the S&P 500, and it's a massive company. They got nearly 32,000 employees globally. Now, Q1, they had an absolute blowout quarter. They beat estimates by 13.5%, earnings per share beat by 29%, net income was up from $1.19 billion the previous quarter to $3.26 billion. They returned $2.7 billion to shareholders through dividends and through buybacks. And what you'll see between these two, because these are the fundamental differences. GLD, that's 1-to-1. Gold up 10, GLD up 10. Newmont moves about 2 to 3 times the gold price move. Gold up 10, Newmont up 20, 30. Why? Because mining costs are relatively fixed. If it costs $1,700 an ounce to mine and gold goes from $3,000 to $3,300, Newmont's profit per ounce jumps from $1,300 to $1,600. That is a 23% increase in profit from a 10% increase in gold. This works in reverse too. If gold drops, Newmont probably falling much harder than GLD. Now, where GLD wins is if you want pure play gold exposure. You want zero operational risk. You're hedging a portfolio or buying insurance. The gold price is flat or declining. GLD just sits there. NEM, they get crushed by fixed costs. Now, Newmont wins when gold is in a sustainable uptrend, which even despite recent movements, it still kind of is. If you want a company generating real cash flows, you believe that gold is staying above systematically $3,000. It's also trading at only about 9.9 times forward-looking earnings. But you get that risk, right? The mine collapse, the country-specific risk, cost inflation. I think the bottom line is here, if you're bullish on gold and want maximum upside, Newmont is the better play. The operating leverage, the dividend, the shareholder returns. If you want gold as insurance and don't want to think about it, that's when you go GLD. If you think gold is peaked or could pull back, GLD loses less, but then maybe you don't want to have as much gold exposure as you do. I think maybe the smart play is a little bit of both, though. There are other ETFs, I'm not going to mention it, but there's another ETF similar to GLD that has a little bit lower liquidity. But if your position sizing isn't that high, you do get a lower fee. You know, I would say, generally speaking, we're very bullish on gold. You know, we tend to be in the mining space, and I think Newmont is a solid miner. Thanks for the call. SpaceX $60 billion all-stock acquisition of Cursor, the AI programming assistant that popularized vibe coding, is the kind of deal that makes strategic sense, but should set off alarm bells for the broader market. The strategic logic is clear. SpaceX's Grok chatbot hasn't gained the traction that Claude and ChatGPT have. Cursor, which has become the go-to tool for AI-assisted software development, that gives Musk a genuine presence in corporate AI. But zoom out and the pattern is concerning. Companies always have a choice between issuing debt and issuing stock to finance acquisitions and capital spending. And stock valuations are high, equity is cheap for companies to issue. The legendary investor Ben Graham thought of the market as a manic, depressive, offering daily prices. Sometimes too high, sometimes too low. And companies as a group choose to sell stock aggressively, they're telling you they think their price is high. That's exactly what's happening here. Goldman Sachs estimates net equity supply, new shares hitting the market minus shares removed from buybacks, will be roughly flat in 26 for the first time since 2003. Alphabet raised $85 billion in a historic equity offering. Meta reportedly planning something similar. SpaceX, of course, raised $86 billion in its IPO. It's now issuing $60 billion more in stock for Cursor. Companies are financing almost half the cost of current quarter M&A deals with stock, a level matched only during the dot-com bubble and the 20 to 2021 SPAC mania. The historical precedent, it's a bit uncomfortable. In the dot-com era, two-thirds of M&A was financed with stock. In 2020, 2021, it was 45%. Both periods preceded sharp market declines. The current quarter, running at about 49% equity financed. As one columnist at the Wall Street Journal noted, when lots of companies are raising cash to chase the same opportunity, in this case, AI, there are three possibilities. The opportunity is so huge, it absorbs all the capital and delivers fat profits. The opportunity is real, but oversupply destroys margins. Or the AI claims are wildly overhyped, and the money, poof, goes up in smoke. The danger isn't that any individual deal is bad. SpaceX buying Cursor may prove brilliant. Apple raising $85 billion to fund AI may generate returns for decades. The danger is the collective signal. When the companies that were buying back their stock for the past decades suddenly reverse, start selling it, they're telling you something about where they think valuations stand. And historically, that signal has been more reliable than traditional valuation metrics. We're about to head to our final break, but before we do, I want to mention yet again that our newest upcoming InvestTalk Wealth webinar, Beyond the Yield, where we will be talking all about how you can strategize for your income needs, is coming up a week from tomorrow, June 30th, from 12 to 1 p.m. Pacific time. As always, this webinar is free. As always, we will have a Q&A, live Q&A session after we go over the topic. And as always, we can't wait to see you there. So head over to investtalk.com and sign up for the newest InvestTalk Wealth webinar, June 30th. Sign up today. This is InvestTalk. I'm Lou Guerrero. We have one goal here, and that's to help you achieve your financial freedom. Our work will continue after this break. So if you want your question answered today, you got to pick up that phone and dial 888-99-CHART.
Lou Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
You spend lots of time optimizing your portfolio, researching positions, managing risk, and leveraging the power of compounding. So, here's a question you need to take seriously. What could poor sleep actually be costing you? We know that sleep deprivation can degrade your cognitive performance, decision quality, emotional regulation, and temperature is a key factor in determining quality sleep. Finally, the temperature regulation challenge has been solved by the ChiliPad 2.0, a water-based mattress topper. It actively controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees all night to get you into deep, restorative sleep faster and keep you there longer. It works on your existing mattress, so a new bed is not needed. Visit www.sleep.me/invest to get up to $255 off a ChiliPad 2.0. This special offer is available for InvestTalk listeners and only for a limited time. Order it today and get your 30-day sleep trial with free shipping and free returns. Go to www.sleep.me/invest and see why cool sleep is worth every cent.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
While the public market has been captivated by the giga IPOs and the AI rally, a slow-motion disaster is unfolding in the private market. By May of this year, 332 of the 1,900 unicorns tracked by Stanford professor Ilya Strobilov had raised money at a valuation at or below their previous peak. Of those, 212 were valued at under $1 billion, meaning they'd lost their unicorn status entirely. Another 383 unicorns had disclosed no new funding in the previous 3 years. The Economist has dubbed these companies zombie unicorns, companies that were once valued at $1 billion or more, but are now shadows of their former selves. Cameo, the celebrity video platform, was valued at $1 billion in 2021. It's now worth $82 million. Sondermind, a mental health platform, went from $1.1 billion to $7 million. These aren't outliers. They're the visible tip of a systemic repricing. The zombie problem is the direct consequence, rather, of the zero interest rate era, when cheap money encouraged investors to pour capital in the VC funds regardless of the quality of the underlying businesses. VC fundraising peaked at $223 billion in 2022, collapsed to $66 billion last year as interest rates rose and returns, unsurprisingly, deteriorated. The startups that received inflated valuations during the boom, they are now stuck. They can't raise at their old prices. They can't IPO without accepting massive markdowns, and their VC backers are increasingly unwilling to throw good money after bad. PitchBook expects net valuation cuts of between $500 billion and $1 trillion as firms reprice, scramble to find buyers, or even just go under. That puts their estimated total, the unicorn universe, below the 10 most valuable companies. Is worth about $5 trillion, facing a 10 to 20% haircut. And the timing pressure is building. Nearly half the firms on that database that raised at or below their peak had their last round in 2021. From late next year, their investors, they're going to start demanding results. VC agreements often allow investors to veto public offerings if they think they'd get a better outcome by waiting. But waiting only works if someone's willing to invest more. Today's VCs are focused on the handful of AI superstars, not on propping up aging companies with fading business models. For investors, you may be asking yourself, I didn't throw any money into Cameo. Why do I care? Well, the zombie unicorn reckoning matters because of the indirect effects. VC funds that are returning less money will make their limited partners, their pension funds, their endowments, their front offices, less willing to allocate to venture capital. What does that do? That tightens fundraising for early stage companies broadly, not just the zombies. And the spillover into public markets, it's real. If zombie unicorns can't IPO, the giga IPO pipeline stays concentrated in a handful of mega companies rather than broadening into the mid-market listings that historically support a healthy market ecosystem. And so, as the biggest problem for the past couple years has been breadth, the issues of the zombie unicorns may, in the near future, make that concern worse. Well, that does it for another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads, which, of course, you can get at iTunes and you can get at Spotify. And while you're over there, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a rate and review. If you haven't already, I encourage you to check out the Invest Talk YouTube channel. Just head over to YouTube and search Invest Talk with two T's, because we have YouTube-specific content and we dive deeper into one focus point a week. My last reminder of the day, our next wealth webinar is set for Tuesday, June 30th from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time. The title, Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs. If you want to join us, and we hope that you do, head over to investtalk.com and sign up for the free wealth webinar. Lastly, if today's show made you think about your specific financial circumstances and whether or not you're doing everything you can to achieve your financial goals, Justin and I speak to investors just like yourselves each and every day. I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a free portfolio review. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.